When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey everybody, it's Josh Rutledge, your co-host for Fearscape Paranormal Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to support us more, please head over to our website, fearscapepodcast.com. There you can click on store and browse some really awesome t-shirts and maybe pick a couple up, or even go to our Patreon page and see how you can support us monthly. We love bringing you awesome content just as much as you like listening to it. Enjoy the show.
The following program is presented for entertainment purposes. WCHQ does not necessarily endorse the ideas presented.
Fearscape is a program that explores the legends and lore around many creepy and scary things. Information is researched and presented in an entertainment fashion and is presented based off of what we found. Legends have a way of changing over time, so
beware.
Fearscape.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Fearscape here on 100.9 FM WCHQ, as well as the Destination Nation Network. I am your host, Stefan Gearhart, joined, as always, by my luxuriously just suave host, Josh Rutledge.
Thanks for the description. That's amazing.
Absolutely. We got a really cool show tonight. We are going to be talking about Native American monsters and creatures and so much lore there that we had to trim the fat.
Oh, yeah. Barely scratching the surface tonight.
That's right. And we have a very, very special guest in the studio. One of my favorite people in the world. One of my friends. Musician, local R&B artist. What did you say? Urban Soul? Is that right?
Yes.
Yes. I love it. Man, this is Rob Lee. Give it up. Yeah, we are super pumped to have you, sir. Just joining us on this, we're actually going to play some of your music because you got a new EP dropping, and we'll get talking about that in a little bit. But before we get into that, we got to get into some spooky news. People need to know what's going on in the media. All right, what do we got, luxuriously suave?
Yep. So this comes from MUFON. An Ohio witness in Hillard reported watching a triangular object with bright lights and a dark aura around it in the sky, according to testimony in the case. The witness was out walking their dog on August 2nd at 8:30 a.m., and this is what they had to say.
I was in a field walking my dog when I saw a bright light coming from low from the north. I couldn't hear any sound coming from what I thought was a plane. I started to run, thinking a plane was about to crash. I stopped when I saw it kept the same altitude. It flew right above me. It was triangular shape, about the length of a helicopter, way too big to be a drone.
Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. You know, a lot of these MUFON reports, it's always funny. They're always out walking their dogs.
Yeah.
And so, like, we're about to move to an apartment. And so we're going to have to start walking our dog. And so I'm going to be like, eyeball in the sky now, man.
Well, like, hey, when I go out to, like, roll the trash out to the curb or something like that, I look up. Like,
why do I imagine you literally rolling a bag of trash? Like, you're just rolling it.
Like it's full of leaves or something?
Yeah. Not that kind of roll.
Can I ask a question? Who do these people report these stories to?
MUFON. So MUFON stands for the Mutual
UFO Network.
UFO Network. And so they are a huge organization, have been around for a very long time. And so a lot of times they'll either pick up something and reach out. Like, so sometimes media picks it up, and so MUFON will reach out to them. But you can also report it to MUFON. And this, I mean, we get so many stories from MUFON. I mean, it is just hundreds daily. I mean,
the lights that I saw that night in my house, I thought about reporting that to MUFON.
Do it! Do it, man.
Really?
Because if nothing else, it gives me a chance to talk about the podcast.
Exactly. There you go. And so, yeah, that's what people do. And, you know, there's a or government agencies or things like that. There's a big shared network of people that work together. But MUFON is the biggest one.
Wow.
But, yeah, thank you. Is that all we got?
Yeah, that's all we got.
Tweeny Daney.
Yep.
From there. All right. All right, so let's get cracking and smacking and lacking and jack-a-lacking and all that stuff and get into Native American monsters.
Let's drop the last one off of there.
No, it's a jack-o'-lantern, man. Okay. Don't be.
Okay.
We can do whatever we want now. But no, we're going to be talking about Native American monsters and creatures tonight. We are in November, and, you know, not to say that the only time we can think about Native American stuff is November, but it definitely jumps out at us.
Yep.
And so we wanted to pay homage to that because you have an obsession with the Wendigo.
Oh, yeah.
I love the Wendigo. And that's kind of besides Sasquatch, I think those are the two first, like, people's introductions into that. Or a Skinwalker.
Yeah, Skinwalker.
Yeah, yeah. Those are shape-shifting freaks.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so we're going to get into that. Rob, feel free to join in and comment and talk. And we're going to see what Josh has brought on to the table to us. I use table because Thanksgiving's coming up.
Okay. Well, in that case, I'll say I have a cornucopia of news.
A virtual cornucopia.
All right. So breaking into it here. Start off, Wendigo.
Or Wendigo.
Or Wendigo.
I hate when people say Wendigo.
So, my introduction to the Wendigo comes from the book, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
I thought you were going to say the Book of Mormon, so.
No. I'm pretty sure that the Wendigo is not mentioned in the Book of Mormon.
Yeah, you never know. The Angel Moroni was actually a Wendigo. But no, yeah, you're right. I didn't even think about that. That would have been mine, too. Would have been Scary
Stories.
But, I mean,
that story, man, it just creeped me out. I can still almost remember all the kind of sketch work and everything that was in the book.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, yeah. So that was
that's what I should have used. You know, we were on Great Day Live recently, and so we were talking about this upcoming episode, and I should have grabbed that picture from Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, it's just anything like that that's kind of sketched. Like, it's not really a drawn picture, just sketch. It just always seems like it's more creepy anyways. Yeah. So yeah, we got the Wendigo. So the Wendigo basically comes from mostly it's the tribes up in the Nova Scotia, Canada, Northern Forest, all that kind of stuff in there. And it's mainly because it happens kind of in the wintertime, mostly is when you find Wendigos and things like that. And so it tends to stay more wintry in those areas for longer.
Yeah, even up towards the Great Lakes and stuff.
Yep. So this, you know, Native American Algonquin tribes is where the Wendigo lore comes from. But it's basically a mythological man-eating creature or evil spirit. The Wendigo is described as a monster with some characteristics of a human or as a spirit who has possessed a human being and then made them become monstrous. Its influence is said to invoke acts of murder, insatiable greed, cannibalism, and the cultural taboos against such behaviors.
Interesting. So, you know, definitely have heard the cannibalism.
Yeah.
But one thing I didn't hear was that it was a spirit that would possess a human and then cause them to essentially change into the monster. That's even scarier.
Yeah, it is.
To think that you yourself could become the Wendigo without I mean, it's very like demon possession.
Right.
Yeah. Sure.
Well, there's some other stuff that I found. I don't remember if I included it in the research, but that said that Wendigo, if you were a Wendigo, you had the ability to make other Wendigo.
Okay, so like a vampire.
Like a vampire type thing. So if you were...
if you needed a family.
Well, I mean, it says that, like, if you were vulnerable, like if you were already kind of doing, I don't know, greedy type things, then you were more susceptible to being bitten or created into a Wendigo.
Great. So it's almost like like a pheromone of some sort, you know.
Yeah, or if you think about the whole evil spirit idea, then your character is diminished because you're doing certain things, and so you're more susceptible to that evil spirit coming in So as the tale goes, the Wendigo was once a lost hunter. During a brutally cold winter, this man's intense hunger drove him to cannibalism. After feasting on another human's flesh, he transformed into a crazed man-beast roaming the forest in search of more people to eat. So, there are different versions of the Wendigo legend.
Dude's hungry.
They say different things about things like his speed and his agility. Some claim he is unusually fast and can endure walking for long periods of time.
He's a $6 million monster.
Other says he walks in a more haggard type manner, as if he's falling apart. Again, thinking about the Wendigo and its influence on people, speed wouldn't necessarily be a skill. Unlike other carnivores, the Wendigo doesn't rely on pursuing its prey in order to capture and eat it. Rather, one of his traits is the ability to mimic human voices.
Yes. I've heard this. This is what creeps me out. This is the same thing. Waverly has spirits that'll do that. Those doppelgangers or different things like that tend to mimic human voices.
So have you ever heard this is a really odd thing, but have you ever heard a peacock call?
Yeah. Sounds like help.
It sounds like a woman screaming help, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of this, I remember one time I was out fishing with some friends. We were coming back, and we heard this woman screaming, help, help. And we thought something was going on, but it was because this guy had peacocks that he kept in his farm. So, it was So just think about you're out in the woods. It's snowing. There's snow all over the ground. It's dark. It's cold. And you hear this person maybe yelling your name or yelling help. You go to investigate. Next thing you know, your lunch.
Boom. Your Wendigon. You're welcome.
Yeah. So... Wendigon.
Wow.
You can't even move from that.
That sucks.
You can't even move from that. You're so stuck.
How do you when are you getting to the part where you escape the Wendigo? How do you overcome this gruesome spirit?
Run.
Yeah, run, I guess, cause
don't trust nobody.
He may or may not be slow. I don't know. If you hear somebody calling your name in the woods, maybe just stay where you are and call back,
Or you just say, hey, no, no, help,
no. I'm going to go get some help.
Yeah.
And go get like 50 people.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm cold. Me too. It's winter.
Sorry, should have grabbed a blanket.
Yep.
It goes on to, there's a bunch of different tribes, all part really of the Algonquin speaking peoples that, believe in this Wendigo lore. Basically, they all think that, the Wendigo is a malevolent, cannibalistic, supernatural being, strongly associated with winter, the north, coldness, famine, and starvation.
Yeah, and there's some, I don't know if you have this on here, and so I may be jumping in on it, but it's like there are some traditions that believe the Wendigo were human.
Yeah.
Like they started as humans, but in the winter were forced into cannibalism.
Yeah.
They stuck with that and continued with that, and over time they evolved into the supernatural creatures.
Yep. And they lived in caves.
Yeah.
Right? They live down
in the ground.
There's a game called Until Dawn.
Yes, I love that.
I love that game. It's like a choice based game, and it's the storyline is about the Wendigo.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
and now that I think about it and listen to this folklore, it's like even the choices you made as certain characters would get you killed by the Wendigo. If you did, if you made bad choices, basically. Mm-hmm. So
if you had PS4, I'd let you borrow it. It really is good, it's got good game. Rami Malek. is in it. Hayden Panettiere. Like, and they look like them as
It's like a movie. It's like you're playing a movie. Oh. It's really cool.
It's choose
like,
your own adventure. Choose your own adventure. It's not high action, so I mean, it's good. It's scary too, it dude. I made sure to play the whole game with my headphones on.
With the lights off too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you make good choices? Did you save everyone?
No. There was sometimes I legit got scared, and I was like, you're on your own.
Yeah, you can save up to, like, 7 people, and I think you can literally lose one like, you can save 6 people, 5 people, 4 people, 3, you know, or none. Yep. So it's really a really cool game.
Wow.
Wendigo.
I wish there was a service that allowed you to rent consoles.
Oh.
Because then I'd rent a PS4 just to play that.
You used to be able to, like, at Blockbuster and stuff, you could rent a console.
Right. When you could also rent a VHS tape. Yep. All right. So we got a we actually have a description here from a teacher and scholar in Ontario name of Basil H. Johnston. At least that's what I assume it is.
Ooh, can I read it?
Go ahead.
All right.
The Wendigo was gaunt to the point of emaciation, its desiccated skin pulled tightly over its bones. With its bones pushing out against its skin, its complexion the ash gray of death, and its eyes pushed back deep into their sockets, the Wendigo looked like a gaunt skeleton recently disinterred from the grave. What lips it had were tattered and bloody, unclean and suffering from suppuration of the flesh. The Wendigo gave off a strange and eerie odor of decay and decomposition, of death and corruption.
So imagine like Gollum.
Yep.
Yeah.
But maybe walking a little more upright.
Like Gollum if he were an orc.
Is he a Wendigo?
Yeah.
No.
No.
I don't maybe. Think
well.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I mean, he's a cannibal.
Yeah, he is a cannibal. Though it's the ring that made him what he was.
Right.
It ruined
Which
his heart.
Which is greed.
Yeah, it is very much greed.
So.
Very much greed.
Yeah. We just solved... Solve the Hobbit.
Yep. You're welcome. Hashtag Gollum is a Wendigo.
So I'm not even going to try to pronounce some of the names of these tribes. Just say that they're Algonquin peoples. So, but Wendigos are often described as giants, many times larger than human beings. And whenever the Wendigo ate another person, it would grow in proportion to the meal it had just eaten, so it would never be full.
Oh, that sucks. That's a really cool way to explain hunger.
So it's like...
Maybe that's what happened to Galactus. Like, he used to be just a dude.
Yeah.
But he just got bigger and bigger until he had to eat planets. Like,
wow.
So it's like...
Hashtag Galactus is a Wendigo.
He's a Wendigo.
So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, so he's big and emaciated and full, but yet always hungered because he's constantly growing. So, which I guess where you come into the giant aspect, right? So, I guess the bigger the Wendigo, the more people it had consumed.
Right.
So, which, you know, the image that you did showed like a really big
yeah,
Wendigo.
Like he held the girl,
like he
in,
held
his
the girl
in
his one hand. So, I mean, he had been...
Well, it's interesting because if you'll remember Apache Chief from Super Friends, that was his like, superpower was getting big.
Hashtag.
Hashtag Apache Chief.
Is a Wendigo. So, yeah. The Wendigo is seen as the embodiment of gluttony, greed, and excess. Never satisfied after killing and consuming one person, they are constantly searching for new victims. Mm. So let's talk a little bit about human Wendigos, cannibals. Mm. In some traditions, humans, overpowered by greed, could turn into Wendigos. So this again gets back to, like, you know, maybe the spirit aspect.
Right. So hashtag Jeffrey Dahmer was a Wendigo.
What does Jeffrey Dahmer keep in his shower?
What?
Head and shoulders. What does Jeffrey Dahmer keep in his fridge? Arm and Hammer. Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. Didn't know if I'd ever going to be able to use those jokes again. But, you know, we bring them back.
Yeah.
So
Just a reminder to take my improv class.
Right. Humans could also turn into Wendigos by being in contact with them for too long. So this part right here is confusing. So you're in contact with a Wendigo, but you're not dead. Like,
well,
it's not consuming you.
Think about it being an airborne disease or a King Kong scenario.
Or maybe it's like the ice creature thing from Star Wars. You know, he catches Luke, hangs him up in his cave. He's going to eat him later.
Later, yeah.
You know, so then if Luke hangs around too long.
Right, and then his wife accidentally ordered pizza. Yeah. And the next thing you know, like, he's turning into a Wendigo. And
right.
It's just awkward.
Yeah, you know, hashtag Luke is a Wendigo. All right, so there is a ceremony that certain tribes perform.
And the one of them looks like it says ass and bone.
Yeah, it does. So. I don't want to offend anybody.
I don't either. I'm just saying it's. Yeah. I think it's Assiniboine.
Probably. It's interesting, too. One of the tribes in here is the Kree, which isn't that from...
That's K-R-E-E if you're talking about Marvel.
Okay.
Yes.
But maybe somebody stole it. I don't know.
It's possible.
But it is a satirical ceremonial dance, sometimes performed during times of famine to reinforce the seriousness of the Wendigo taboo. The ceremony, known as...
Ooh, I want to try this.
Go ahead.
Wendigukonazimoen.
That's a pretty good try.
Wendigo Okonzahimoen.
We'll go with that.
That's crazy long.
Yeah, that's. I'm sure it sounds better from someone speaking the native tongue.
Sure.
Was performed during times of famine and involved wearing masks and dancing backwards around a drum.
Interesting.
So, have you ever tried walking backwards?
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever tried dancing
mm-hmm.
backwards?
It sucks.
Yeah, so. Whoever got picked to be in that drum circle.
I'm sure they work on it. But they're like, you need to sweep the area really good, okay? If I hit
right.
one rock, I'm down.
If there's a, you know, a root that...
Yeah, there's one root, we're done.
So, the... Now, there is a actually a modern medical term called Wendigo psychosis that is described by a psychiatrist as a culture-bound syndrome with symptoms such as an intense craving for human flesh... and fear of becoming a cannibal.
Interesting. So it's culture related, not...
Yeah.
Okay.
In some indigenous communities, environmental destruction and insatiable greed are also seen as manifestation of the Wendigo psychosis.
Well, it also reminds me of, during the Halloween episode, we talked about the lycanthropy psychosis, which was very similar as well.
Yep. So one of the most infamous cases... is the story of Swift Runner, a Native American man who murdered and ate his whole family during the winter of 1879. According to, and wait for it, Animal Planet, of all the places to do a story like this.
Hashtag Wendigo is an animal.
Swift Runner claimed to be possessed by a Wendigo spirit at the time of the murders. He was still hanged for his crime, though.
Yeah, so it's interesting, since you brought up Animal Planet, because Wendigos are, sometimes they have antlers, sometimes they have fur, sometimes they're very just like Gollum, like they're skinny and gross and they look very human-esque, but it's all different, and I think different tribes kind of have their own ideas as well. So,
yeah, I mean, some of the pictures that I came across were actually, it was like a like almost like a dog with really long legs
mm-hmm.
and then antlers coming out of its
yeah.
back. I mean, it was really
weird
looking. So, moving on from the Wendigo, there is another supernatural creature called the Weshug or Weshuj.
I think it's the Weshuge.
There you go. Yeah, it actually it says pronounced.
That's how I did it. You're welcome.
And this is a man-eating creature or evil spirit appearing in the legends of the Athabascan people. Which I think is a subset of the Algonquin tribes.
Yeah.
In beaver mythology, it is said to be a person who has been possessed or overwhelmed by the power of one of the ancient giant spirit animals. So this is actually like, in a lot of Native American tribes, you have these big spirit animals.
Mm-hmm.
They're almost like the gods,
yeah.
if you will. And so this is like, this is basically a god possession,
Yeah, it's very similar to a lot of Japanese lore as well.
Yep. So, related to becoming too strong, these giant animals were crafty, intelligent, powerful, and somehow retained their power despite being transformed into a normal-sized animal of the present day. Professor Robin Riddington. Sorry, anything that ends with a ton, I'm just going to assume is snooty English person.
She's from Nebraska.
came across stories of the Weishuge while speaking with the Danzi of the Peace River region in western Canada. The Danzi believed that one could become Weishuge by breaking a taboo and becoming too strong. Examples of these taboos include a person having a photo taken with a flash, listening to music made with a stretched string or hide, such as a guitar music, eating meat with fly eggs in it.
Okay.
Well, this is, you think,
yeah,
this
I know.
Is, you
know, I know.
We didn't always have refrigeration and all that kind of stuff, so... like the Wendigo, the Weishuge seeks to eat people, attempting to lure them away from their fellows by cunning. The Weishuge is said to be stronger than the Wendigo, and also more intelligent and cunning, which, if the Wendigo is an evil spirit, and the Weishuge is a sky people, basically, type yeah. animal spirit, then that would make sense.
Yeah.
In one folktale, it is made of ice and very strong, and is only killed by being thrown on a campfire and kept there overnight until it has melted. Being a Weishuge is considered a curse and a punishment, as they are destructive and cannibalistic creatures.
Jeez. How can it be made of ice and cannibalistic? Or am I misunderstanding?
Maybe it's drinking water.
Well, I mean, so it's a person who's been in, possessed right. by the spirit. So maybe they're frozen.
Right.
It's a frozen person, but they're still eating people. I don't yeah. know. It's like the Ice King from.
And then when I think of possession, I guess it's more like a transformation. Like, because this is a lot of these things I just. It's almost funny, honestly. Like, no disrespect to any of the people.
No, but
I think they know it's lore as well.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
But, I mean, it's...
It sounds like a spiritual transformation, like a description of a spiritual transformation more so than a
physical.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it could be, and it also could be the... So think about some of the possession, like demonic possessions in people.
Yeah.
Some of those stories, like people change, right?
Yeah, they yeah. change.
So,
yeah.
I mean, it could just be that the possession causes those changes to actually occur.
Wow.
I mean, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day about all of these types of things, most of the stuff we talk about on the program, and they were saying, you know, do you think any of this stuff is real? And I said, well, I think that people, our ancestors, thought it was real enough, mm-hmm. and that as we, as a people, have matured and our brains have, our brain capacity has increased, we've dismissed a lot of these things as being just an ignorant person not understanding why something is the way it is,
right.
and using lore to explain it. But I think sometimes maybe we do ourselves a justice that maybe these things do exist and go bump in the night. And we assume that somebody just created this story, but maybe it was,
right?
You know, actually true. So,
yeah. Have you guys seen the movie The Ritual on
yes.
Netflix? Isn't that a Wendigo in
it's,
that?
It's very similar, yeah.
Like,
but that's like a German or Norwegian
movie?
Film.
Yeah.
And so it deals with their lore, so it's
okay,
something based off that, but it's very
it
similar.
It looks just like that. I mean, like. I just pulled up some pictures and stuff on Google, and it...
Yeah, it does. I didn't even think about that, but yeah, if you haven't seen The Ritual, it's really good. It's a foreign film, but you can watch it dubbed.
Yeah.
But it was way better than
I
thought it was
so
going to be.
It's so good.
Yeah.
Man.
But it's definitely that cobbled-together creature.
Well, and there's a lot of lore across the world
mm-hmm.
that shares similarities.
I notice. I'm noticing, yeah.
I mean, and then, you know, you mentioned in Japanese lore, there's some similarities, and then we have, so all these peoples had, who at the time probably had never interacted with each other yet, have similar lore, begs the reason that are these the same creatures that exist in multiple places?
Right.
Just described or interacted.
Just described through their eyes and their experiences to make sense of it.
Yep.
Yep, I agree. Wow.
So, moving on. The
Nunyanowi.
It's
my aunt.
Yeah.
Nunyanowi is what I think it is.
Nunyanowi.
Yeah. Which comes from the Cherokee lore. And it basically means dressed in stone.
Okay, so we're getting our golem type creature.
Yeah. Yeah. So it is described as a human-like being with a skin as hard as stone, which no weapon can pierce. It carries a magical cane which points out victims and has other magical powers. Despite its monstrousness. There you go. Whatever. Apple. You say. Yeah.
You say apple. I say apple.
It's yeah.
Like, hashtag apple was a Wendigo.
It is described as a powerful sorcerer or medicine man. It devours human beings, interact with spirits, and can control people's minds.
Interesting. So when you've got a creature that's not human, is it technically cannibalism?
That's
thinking about the Wendigo going back, you know, like, is it?
I guess
it's hard for us to not feel like we're the top of the food chain.
Maybe the cannibalism is what causes the transformation into Wendigo.
Right. And there is. That's what I said. There's some lore that backs that
up.
You
have to
eat
some human meat before any of these things can happen. You could turn to ice. You could turn to stone.
Mm. Ooh, that's a good idea. That's a good thought. That all of these things are like your own personal hell that happens instantaneously.
So, crap, I accidentally swallowed a fingernail.
What do you think happened to Jeffrey Dahmer? Okay. Before that, he was just a guy at school.
Just a guy working at Radio Shack.
We've all snapped, you know.
Yeah.
All got the Wendigo.
So, according to myth, the Nunyanowi was led by its cane to a village. However, the village had been warned in advance by a hunter who had spotted the creature in the mountains. The medicine man warned the villagers that, though the monster would be very difficult to kill with weapons, it could not bear the sight of a menstruating woman.
Okay, so it's just a Republican. Like a boomer.
Right.
A baby boomer Republican.
Wow.
So seven such women were assembled and placed in front of the village. After the monster had seen them all, it was weakened so much that it could not move.
No, bro. No. Is that Kotex?
Red Bull is not the only thing that gives you wings.
All of these myths take such a dynamic turn. You know, it's like, I understand.
Yep.
And then it's like, boom. Like,
I mean, listen, though. This is the first time menstruating women, though, are considered powerful, though, in a lot of, like, biblical culture and things like that. They were sent out of the village
It
was like, you will defeat the monster that a weapon cannot defeat.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it could move. The medicine man then burned the creature, and its remains contained a great jewel and lumps of red paint.
Okay.
So this kind of, you know, getting back to your golem reference, I think the golem is like mold. There's a bunch of different golems, but there is one made out of clay. Mm-hmm. And you can mold it out of clay, and then you infuse it with something. And that makes it into a living
creature.
That goes off after.
Yeah, and I think it's there's also like sacred text that you can roll up and put in their mouth, and that awakens them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually did a lot of research on the golem a little while ago, and there's actually a golem for pretty much every element.
Yeah, and it's really cool, man. Yeah. There's a lot of lore, and that original silent film, the golem is really, really cool, by the way.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, it's good.
All right, moving on. The
wait.
Go ahead.
Are those Wendigo in what's the name of the movie with the ladies that go down the descent? Have you guys seen
the cave creatures?
Yeah.
I don't know if those are Wendigo, but I mean, it could be.
They're cannibal things. Yeah. And they, like,
that's a good movie, too. It's really good.
Yeah, I can't. I tried watching it. I couldn't.
It's scary. It's good.
It's nuts.
So, moving on? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. That's okay. So, the Nuni High. Yep. Are a race of immortal spirit people in Cherokee mythology. In the Cherokee language, Nuni High literally means the people who live anywhere. But it is often translated into English as the people who live forever. I mean,
that's a very different thing.
Right. I mean, it is. The Cherokee believe the Nuni High to be a type of supernatural human being completely distinct from ghosts and nature spirits, as well as from gods. And in this sense, the Nuni High and the Cherokee equivalent of fairies and believe in fairy-like beings as universal among all ethnicities, including American.
Yeah, Indian tribe. I have absolutely heard tales of Native American little people. Very interesting. So once again, yeah, here's their idea of fae and pixies and brownies.
Yep.
Similar, but in a whole different continent.
So according to Cherokee folklore, the Nunahai had many underground townhouses throughout the southern Appalachian Mountains, which, by the way, Kentucky is in the southern Appalachian Mountain area.
Yeah.
So
it's a big Cherokee area. So.
Yeah. And they were particularly fond of high mountain peaks where no timber ever grew. Hunters would often hear the Nunahai in the mountains singing and dancing and beating drums.
Just very, very fairy. It's very pixie folk. I mean, it's very similar.
But when they would go toward the sound, it would shift about and suddenly seem to be coming from behind them or from some other direction, so that the person hearing the sound would never be able to find where it was coming from.
So I went camping years ago with my friend Santosh and my friend Mary Taylor. We went camping on this farm in the Daniel Boone National Forest, like right on the Appalachians. And we were up in this farm up in the mountains. And both nights that we were out there, there wasn't another farm for like 20 miles. We heard this Native American drumming. And it's funny that you say this, because when we would move, it felt like it would change directions, like all of a sudden, yeah, it was behind us. Both nights that we camped out, we heard it off in the distance. And, you know, granted, it could be, you know, echoing off the mountains we were in.
Right.
I don't know. But just like that, it weirds me out a little bit, because now I'm thinking, I'm like, yeah, I remember it felt like it moved behind us and it was in a different direction once we went towards a certain direction. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. Makes you wonder if they're kind of like the Jin,
right?
Live in like an area that's in between worlds,
right?
So, all right. So next up, we have the Raven Mocker.
What a great name!
I mean, I feel like if it wasn't two words, it would be great as a last name.
Yeah, Raven Mocker. It's like Miss Tessmacher. But no, Raven Mocker, what a great name, because ravens already will mock you, so it's kind of cool. So what's up these guys?
So this is an evil spirit, and this is the most feared of Cherokee witches. According to Cherokee mythology, it robs the sick and dying of their heart. Normally appearing as old, withered men and women, or turning completely invisible except to certain medicine men, they take to the air in a fiery shape, with the sounds of a raven's cry and a strong wind as they hunt for their next victim. After tormenting and killing their victim by slitting the victim's head, they consume his heart, doing so without leaving a mark on the victim's skin. And add a year to their life for every year that the slain would have still lived.
Interesting.
The sound of a raven mocker means that someone in the area will soon die. Raven mockers are normally invisible when feeding, but those with strong medicine can not only spot them, but cause them to die within 7 days.
7 days.
Again, the whole numerology of things is just really interesting. But medicine men will sometimes stand guard over the dying to prevent raven mockers from stealing the heart of the affected, or the afflicted. Raven mockers are feared and envied by other witches of Cherokee folklore, and their bodies may be used by said witches after death. So, yeah, it's interesting that, I wonder what's the difference between a witch and a medicine man in Native American culture.
Probably just gender.
Okay. Hmm.
Or dark versus light.
Yeah.
Possibly.
Yeah. So next up on the list, we have the Adlet, or Quiglet.
Quiggly down under.
Yeah, I don't know, or Piglet. These are a race of creatures in the Inuit mythology of Greenland, as well as Labrador and Hudson Bay. While the word refers to inland Native American tribes, it also denotes a humanoid, dog-legged tribe.
Ah, so like they were a separate tribe.
Yeah.
A pack.
A so pack. A wolf pack.
Yeah.
The lower part of the body of the canine adlet is like that of a dog, and the upper part is like that of a man. The all adlet run quickly.
Because they have dog legs.
Right. And their encounters with men usually end with the man as the victor.
Okay, so they're playing dog in that regard, whereas the dog is subservient.
Right. In Inuit lore, they are often portrayed as in conflict with humans and are supposed to be taller than Inuit. In some stories, they are cannibals. There's a lot of cannibalism across the board. Inuit from Labrador use the term adlet. Tribes west of the Hudson Bay use the word piglet. The monstrous race begotten by the adlet was identified with inland Native Americans by the Labrador and Hudson Bay tribes, Inuit from Greenland and Baffin Land, which had no Native American neighbors, used the term to refer to the half-human, half-canine creatures.
Interesting.
So this next one is
the Iyarok.
Pretty creepy. This is a shapeshifter who kidnaps children and hides them away and then abandons them. The Inukshukatka, I don't know, sorry if I offend anybody, of stone,
I believe it's the Inukshuk.
Okay. I'll just let you pronounce all these.
Okay.
Allow these children to find their way back if they can convince the Idrak to let them go.
So this is Inuit as well. God, this one creeps me out a lot. I don't know, anything taking children really bothers me.
Well, the Inuit are really northern. I mean, they're way up there.
They're at
like
the
Arctic Circle.
Arctic Circle and stuff in Alaska. And
it really makes me want to stay in a nice, fair climate.
For sure.
Think about that next time you want to take an Alaskan cruise.
Well, and that's why it's interesting. You don't hear tale of, like, the Wendigo or things like that down in, like, the Seminoles and things like that, where it was warmer because there was a less need for eating.
Cannibalism to occur.
Exactly.
You're less likely to run out of food stores and all that.
Especially
kind of
during the Ice Age. I mean, like...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, North Baffin dialects, the word or the term Idrak means shapeshifter. That's different. This is the Tarakasuk.
Yeah.
Appear like a half-man, half-caribou monster. An Idrak can appear in any form it chooses, making it particularly deceptive.
Right. So basically they're saying while these other creatures are stuck in a form, this is a shapeshifter,
look like anything. When you are hunting somewhere that an Idrak inhabited, you will see them in the corner of your eye or a fleeting moment. If you try to observe them directly, however, they are completely elusive. So it's like, you know, you're walking through the woods and you feel like there's something moving off to the corner and you look at it and there's nothing there. Mm-hmm. So that, I don't know, that happens to me all the time. In the Freeman's Cove area of Tuckasegic.
There
you go. I'm not very good at pronouncing these things. I apologize. So, Bathurst Island. Freeman's Cove is most notable as a stopover for the ship Intrepid, and also for the failed attempts by the infamous modern-day explorer Corey C. Butte. So, I have a story that involves Mr. Butte, and we'll get to that here in just a second, but I want to touch on real quick that the Idred are said to inhabit a place between two worlds. Not quite in this one, not quite out of the other one. So
which
again,
is one of our theories for right. most creatures.
Right. In the Inuit further south, the North Baffin group, used to hold to the belief that some Inuit went too far north in the chase for game and became trapped between the world of the dead and the world of the living, and thus became the Idred. According to a small handful of surviving elders in the South Baffin region that knew these beliefs, the Inuit that are settled in Resolute Bay and Grice Ford are the shapeshifters or shadow people. So this is like calling out. So the Inuit who are in Resolute Bay and Grice Fjord are the shapeshifters.
Okay.
That's what this is saying.
Right.
Because they went too far north, and so some elders will avoid being in presence of extreme northern Inuit, fearing they will be the evil Idred.
Because it's a shapeshifter. So, yeah I would. Right. I get it. I get it.
So the home of the Idred is said to be cursed, and one will lose their way no matter how skilled or familiar with the land. So you got this guy, Corey Butte, and his wife, Inugu, were said to be out hunting once on the small peninsula across from the Bay of Freeman's Cove. And Butte, despite being a renowned navigator, became a completely turned around. While he and his wife had been there before, and they could clearly see the camp where their children were on the horizon, Butte had to closely follow the trail of disturbed shale and rock to get back. It is thought by many that this is a temporary disorientation was due to the influence of the Idred. When Inugu and Butte finally returned to their children, they discovered a polar bear was circling the camp, sizing their children up for a meal. So again, this distortion caused by the Idred, potentially this polar bear is actually an Idred shapeshifter that's looking at the children, a local hunter with considerable local knowledge, also of Resolute Bay, was said to have experienced this disorientation in the same place on a hunting trip the year before. The Inuit believe the Idred do this to confuse Inuit people and to keep them from moving into the areas. Now, I do have a little bit of a plausible or something that's offered up as a skeptic's view, and that is one plausible explanation for this unusual phenomenon is likely related to large deposits of sour gas.
Like, gas is already nasty, and then you're going to make it sour?
Somebody
knows my Uncle Bill.
Of which can be disturbed by simply walking over tops of the pockets, causing them to expel the toxic gas, hydrogen sulfide. Butte and Inugu made reference in their journals of inexplicable gatherings of a variety of animal remains in seemingly random and mysterious piles. This corroborates the thought that the gas is responsible for these occurrences. Gas and sulfur smoke have been reported in the area, as well as hot water springs discovered by the Amarillic family, all of which could cause a mirage, causing the traveler to see things such as Idred. The gas, vapor, or pockets low in oxygen could also account for hallucinations and sensations of being watched. And, I mean, it does say, like, in some of the other stuff that I found, like, that whole area is, like, a ring of dormant volcanoes and stuff like that. So, all that kind of stuff does release.
Oh, yeah. I mean, up near Lake Superior, there's a ton of sulfur mines because it's just so prevalent. And a lot of wells up there are just so sulfur. You hear it called egg water quite a lot. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, so, we just have scratched the surface.
Yeah, there's so many more. We probably will revisit this again.
Oh, yeah.
New creatures, all that stuff. But a lot of crazy stuff. Mostly cannibalism.
Yeah, that seems to be a common theme, at least among the northern tribes.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hit some of the warmer tribes, yeah, like the Seminoles and whatnot.
Some of the folks out in like the Arizona, New Mexico,
yeah,
area.
The Dene, yeah, or the Navajo, yeah, which is the same thing, or the Apache, things like that. Yeah, I would very much be into that. Or the Zuni.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that is kind of our, like I said, our light touch on Native American creatures. Very, very interesting. Thanks, Josh, for bringing that to us.
Yep.
Yeah. We got a little bit of time, and so I wanted to spin the narrative real quick to Rob because he's here. And one of the reasons we brought you on is because you're going to be releasing an EP. So give us a little bit about that EP and even about your original album. But really, I'm curious about the date when they can get that EP for those that know you.
Definitely. so, yes, I'm releasing the EP on November the 15th. Of this year, obviously, and it's basically a 4-song EP. It's 4 remixes from basically my debut album Art of Flight, which came out April 20th of 2018, and it's just a collaborative project between me and a local producer named Gulches.
I'll tell you what, I got an opportunity to listen to it, as did Josh, and I really, really dig the remixes.
Thank you.
On all of them. I really liked all 4, and of course, I'm like, oh, but now what about this song, and what about this song?
Exactly.
What about this song? I'm like, I would have listened to Gulches do the whole album.
I know.
Like, this is literally my favorite remix album next to Belle Biv DeVoe's Boot City remix.
Wow.
That's really? My favorite. I'm not a huge fan of remix albums, but I love
either.
Boot City. Boot City I like better than the original album. But yeah, I really dug this, especially the song that we're going to play in a little bit is my favorite one on there. But yeah, I know talking to you, you said this is a little bit of a holdover, right?
Yeah, so basically, honestly, I got to a point within this year where I wanted to completely move on from the Art of Flight project, mm-hmm, and just start pushing new music. And I had worked on these remixes because it originally was supposed to be the full album remix, so that way I could offer like maybe a double disc repackaging type of deal. But basically the hard drive that a lot of the songs were saved on ended up being corrupted.
And, oh man,
I know. So I lost my like original song files, you know, like my acapellas and just the recordings.
Wow.
Period. Yes, yeah, sucks.
Then definitely it's time to move on.
Yeah, and really honestly, like that's what I'm taking it as. The guy, Gulches, he really pushed me to like basically release these. I had kind of let them out on SoundCloud and, mm-hmm, and Tune, which is like a streaming site where you get paid in Bitcoin for your stream. So anyways, it was released on both of those platforms, and a lot of people responded to them well. So I was like, hey, I need a project to release to just basically hold everything over because I want to continue to take my time with the new music.
Yep.
So, yeah, so that's how this project came about, and I honestly did not even plan on really pushing it or releasing it at all, so I think I'm just excited about
the fact
that
it's... I'm glad
you are.
It's good. I like it, man, and I'm sad. I would have loved to have heard the whole album, but I'll tell you what. I'm sick of you teasing me with new music.
I know.
You keep teasing us with, like, recordings and stuff.
I know.
I'm so ready. When is this new album coming?
So basically I am going to start pushing new things as early as late December, like early January. And I'm still kind of working on how I want to do that because I have so many things that I just want to drop this, that, and the
I need
other.
Your Christmas album stat.
Which
sexy
is
Christmas.
Which is just how you know it's going to probably end up being a whole album or something.
Right.
But I really am at the point right now working-wise where I can kind of split things up.
Good.
And I can kind of do a project at the beginning of the year and a project at the end of the year. I'm just kind of still figuring out exactly how I want to do it because regardless of however it ends up being packaged, I'm releasing something January 1st. Oops. But yeah, like if not sooner than that.
Yeah.
Like
Well, yeah. Keep doing it, man. I mean, we've been friends before your music, but we've gotten closer because of the music. Had you sing at my wedding.
Yes.
I'm very anxious. Honored. Like, when I tell you that I love your music, I mean it. My wife jams to it. You have made many a night for us.
That's awesome.
Oh. You are on our playlist. Yeah. So, awkward moment.
Yes.
But, yeah, I love
so
it,
many
man.
People have
and
said
I,
that.
And I love the side beats that I find of places where you've guessed it and, because I'm always finding new places,
yeah.
You know, like I've told you before, I love that one you did with the sound. What are they called? The Freedom Sound. Oh, my God. I was just playing it.
You were just playing it, but
I
know. Yeah.
Here we are. So familiar.
Of Random Unison.
Yeah.
The Free
yeah.
Soul Effect.
Free Soul Effect.
Free
yeah.
Soul Effect.
Yeah. God, I love that song.
Yeah.
And I've listened to their album, like, because
yeah.
of you, it directed me to them. That
awesome.
Album's great. Yours
awesome.
Is still the best track on there.
Oh, man. Man, it's so many dope people.
Oh, man.
That.
And then that, like, reggaeton or whatever you that was a
yeah.
cool cut.
Oh,
like,
yeah, La Cama. Yeah.
Like,
with
I'm just
Gio.
Telling you, like, I'm hardcore, man.
I really like to, don't like to limit myself as just R&B, and if I ever do get in a box of just R&B, like I want to bring R&B over a rock beat
yes.
or R&B over a pop
yeah.
beat or
that's how
like
I
just
too.
Really but honestly like I ultimately see myself in the future as like a rock star more like on the Prince level honestly
yes,
yeah.
I'm hoping that I learn to play a million instruments
yes.
you know with but honestly like I know right now it's so boxed in here locally, you know, as far as that goes, but I see myself
yeah.
as
yeah, keep on doing what
yeah,
you
international.
Doing.
And so I want to play this cut. Keep it real, Braxton. Ooh. I already liked this song before, and I like it even more now. Man, Braxton's awesome, man.
He is.
You guys work very well together, and
Thank
so
you.
I want to play this cut for you real
Thank
quick.
You.
Making it rain using these dollar bills. You ain't getting a thing, maybe you need to chill. You need to stay in your lane. Well, can I keep it real? Can I keep it real? Can I keep it real? I'm making it rain using these dollar bills. You ain't getting a thing, maybe you need to chill. You need to stay in your lane. Well, can I keep it real? Can I keep it real? Can I keep it real? I ain't looking for love. Clubs, I already
All right, so that's it, man. Yeah. So November 15th.
November 15th on all streaming
the
platforms.
EP,
the
yeah.
EP, yeah.
All the streaming platforms. Check it out. If you haven't checked out Art of Flight yet, that is also on all the streaming platforms. Yeah. Go check it out. It's an amazing album.
Thank you.
Rob Lee, thank you so much for coming on and sharing that story with us. Because speaking of stories, we got our listener story. This one comes from Haunted History of Kentucky. There was a woman named Belle on there who shared her personal story. And so this comes from Belle.
I've lived in my house for 39 years. Everyone swears it's haunted, especially in the two front rooms of the house, which are the two original rooms. It was built in the 1930s or the 40s. There used to be an old woman who lived there. I don't know her history, but I have heard music, which keeps me awake sometimes, and footsteps walking fast in the hallway. When my daughter spent the night with her new baby, she said she woke up to see a woman bending over the baby, but when she sat up in bed, the person disappeared. My oldest brother, aged 45 at the time, spent the night after our father died. He slept in one of those bedrooms and said he had a dream that he was floating near the ceiling but looked down at his sleeping self. He was so creeped out he wouldn't sleep in there anymore. There was even times we used to rent rooms to students while they spent rotations with local healthcare providers. Several of them voiced odd feelings like someone watching them while sleeping in that room. And even my granddaughter told me, at age 3, after spending the night while looking in that room, she said, "Mama, music comes from there." Strange stories indeed, though the house has always been friendly to me.
So there's a lot going on there.
Yeah.
Music is definitely something that you hear
just,
quite frequently.
It's really all focused in that one room.
Yeah, just, in that one room,
yeah.
Which is super creepy. I would love to really dig up some records on that house and see what's going on.
See what's going on there.
So, but yeah, remember, you guys, if you guys have a story like that, you can send them into fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. They don't have to be long. They don't have to be huge. They just need to be your personal experience. They don't have to be told like Edgar Allan Poe.
Right.
Just first person. Put it out there. Just put your experience. And, you know, if it's a little chopped up, I can work it. We can make it just flow a little bit better. Just tell me your stories.
Yep.
Fearscapepodcast@gmail.com. But we got to get out of here.
Once
again, thank you, Rob Lee, for coming on. We are so thankful. You are always welcome to come on whenever you want, whenever your next project drops, or just when you want to come hang out.
Yep.
Because we didn't even get a chance to hear any of your ghost stories. So.
And I got plenty.
Yep. So we might have to have you come on and do a getting spooky with Rob Lee. Might have to do down the road. We'll do that.
I've seen a Wendigo before. I'm
that was my Uncle Bill, man. No, we got to get out of here. Thank you guys so much for tuning in to Fearscape here on 100.9 WCHQ. Check out the Destination Nation Network at DestinationComics/DNN. And we got to go. So my name is Stefan, and I will catch you on the flip side.
Ooh. This is Josh. The truth is out there.
Rob, you got anything to cut with?
The truth is out there. I'm like in a flying saucer on my EP cover, so I'm really down with that.
You are. Anyways, make sure you guys hold those blankets extra tight, and we'll catch you on the next one. Good night, folks.
Good night.
Night.